The highest valued company on the planet held its annual developer event, and that was the second biggest story in Silicon Valley. This week on Techonomics, host Jason Middleton gets perspective on Microsoft's $26 billion purchase of LinkedIn. Then we dig into Apple's new product announcements from its developer conference, and the battle for our living rooms and how we get our entertainment continues among tech companies. So how is Amazon's position playing out? Finally, the Fed. The Federal Reserve did not raise rates, but is that a good thing for income inequality? Here's host Jason Middleton with this week's Techonomics.
Apple teed up its Worldwide Developers Conference this week, and as per usual, it got some meh as well as some wow. Never mind that Microsoft stole the news cycle on the same day with its purchase of LinkedIn. More on that later in the show. I'm your host, Jason Middleton. Thanks for joining us. Apple CEO Tim Cook took to the stage to clarify Apple's position when it comes to developers. We heart you. And developers love Apple, too. The Cupertino company has paid out $50 billion to developers since the App Store opened almost 8 years ago. For a broader perspective of where Apple is and where it may be headed, we grabbed veteran Silicon Valley analyst Rob Enderle. He's the founder of and chief analyst for the Enderle Group. Big week for Apple this week, overshadowed by Microsoft and LinkedIn, but we're going to stick with Apple for now. What were your takeaways from WWDC this week as an analyst?
They're really getting serious about focusing back on users again and giving them something to be excited about on their platforms. The connection between the iPhone and the Mac PC was very solid, where you can cut in one and paste on the other, and you can use the phone much more aggressively as a security token for things that you're doing online on your PC. So they're really connecting the two things together into a family much more solidly. And then, of course, the maturing of Apple TV into a much more robust platform with Siri improvements. In fact, Siri now is available across all three platforms. What was kind of funny, they didn't talk tablets very much, but with regard to phones, PCs, and Apple TV, they were all over it.
Let's stick with the cross-device performance right now. Are they playing a little bit of catch-up with Microsoft there? Because I think Satya Nadella has already moved Microsoft into that space.
Well, he did continue. But the thing is nobody was buying the phones. And so the difficulty is if nobody buys the phones, Continuum doesn't work that well for you because it's that experience across the platform. The Apple's light on PCs, but they have a PC base. And, of course, they're massive with regard to smartphones. So by having people in large numbers on both platforms, they can certainly talk to a customer base that's large enough to make a difference.
All right, and back to a TV OS. That seemed to be the takeaway that a lot of analysts were looking at is like, okay, this is a great move forward, but maybe they should have launched with these features to begin with.
Well, certainly, but do realize getting rights to TV programs and movies has been very difficult for all the set-top box guys, and that's really what's been gating this. And Steve Jobs himself thought TV was a stupid thing to have, and so this wasn't, during his life, this wasn't the platform he was serious about. So this is one of the changes, positive changes Tim Cook has made. He's made Apple TV a serious project and product, and the end result is we're seeing some good advancement there. But yeah, some of the search improvements and the rest probably should have been there early on. But as I say, the platform just wasn't as serious for Jobs as it is for Cook.
So Apple is managing four OSs by my count right now. Is it fair to expect them to have home runs on all four platforms every year?
No. But with multiple platforms, they can certainly have a success on one or two. So this gives them a kind of a hedge so that they aren't really tied. I mean, right now, they're basically the iPhone company. If something happens with the iPhone and iOS, they're screwed, and they're really trying to spread out their exposure so they've got some kind of redundancy in terms of platforms.
You mentioned the Siri right there. You know, Siri's been playing catch-up against Google Voice for a long time now. Are you seeing that that's getting too close to parity?
Well, so the problem is that Siri is much better marketed. So even though Google Voice is better, more people used Siri and were disappointed. Yeah, but with Cortana and Amazon with Alexa, it got pretty obvious that Siri needed some help. And so now they're finally putting some money into improving her and bringing her forward. They will market the enhancements to Siri. You know, Google just doesn't like to market what it is they do. And so often they have some neat stuff that nobody knows about.
That's very true. You have to go diving to find that stuff or read your column, of course.
No, of course.
Rob, you mentioned the iPhone there. Is iPhone 7 DOA and people are going to wait for iPhone 8? Because, you know, I'm seeing some analysts saying that, like, it's another incremental gain coming off the S into the 7 next year.
Yeah, well, it will be. You know, now that folks are having to pay more often the full price. I mean, Apple's got some interesting financing programs, but the reality is that subsidies to a large extent are gone. They're being much more pragmatic about what it is they're buying, and if they're happy with the product, then they don't buy a new one. And that's been one of the big drags for iPhone sales. Up till now, Apple's been very good at being able to cycle their customers every 2 years. Some people on the yes cycle, some people not. And that's gotten all mucked up now that people are saying, you know, that new iPhone, it's just not enough better than my old one to buy it. So the difficulty they've got is any rumor of a new product now pretty much sells their market. And then if a new product comes out and it's not significantly better, people don't buy it either.
You know, you and I had a benchmark conversation for me 2 years ago talking about Tim Cook taking over as CEO, and you were kind of down on Tim Cook's approach at the time as being an operator and being more of a scale guy rather than an innovation guy. So what's your report card like on Tim now?
Still, not a ton of innovation. Even if you look at a lot of the stuff that was announced, the stuff that Microsoft had already done. So innovation isn't there, but at least he's focusing back on the customer and making it happen. I did notice that on stage he spent very little time. He isn't the stage face. And a good number of the people that did get up on stage were actually good at it, though there were some exceptions. He seems to be getting a bit more comfortable with the job. I'm still very concerned that a lot of what I see him doing is trying to artificially lift the stock price as opposed to putting effort into the problem of not really having something new and innovative coming out there. And the marketing has dropped off rather sharply. And I think that both of those things have a lot to do with the fact that Apple hasn't been doing as well of late.
Well, Apple's share price seems to really depend on the rumor mill and shows like this one. Are there moonshot projects maybe that are in the background that we don't know about that are going to be wowzers later on?
Could be. I mean, we know about the car. So we'll see what happens. So, you know, funny thing is after Google worked on the car, now Google's working on flying cars. So they're getting quite ahead of everybody. But, yeah, I expect there are some moonshot projects out there. Tim Cook seems to be very, very conservative with regard to those activities, and the end result is some stuff that otherwise might come to market and be successful may not be making it out of the lab.
All right, I want to keep it with Tim Cook and Apple for my last question, which is, we have not spoken since the San Bernardino shootings, and I'm wondering how you thought Tim Cook and Apple handled that fight with the FBI.
You know, that was kind of a lose-lose for Apple, so I think they handled it as well as they could. I mean, the reality was there was likely nothing on those company phones that the FBI could use in the first place. They were using this as a shoehorn to use public pressure to get Apple to open up their encryption. Even General Petraeus has gone public and said this was a really bad idea, because if you damage the encryption, you basically open up all the Apple customers to an attack, and in this particular case, for virtually no benefit. So I thought they did as well as they could have. They were set up pretty badly, though, and they took some hits as a result. You know, when your government comes after you, it's not a lot even the most powerful company can do.
All right, Rob, thanks a lot for your time. Good perspectives and much appreciated.
My pleasure.
That's Rob Enderle. He's founder of and principal analyst at the Enderle Group. Coming up after the break, we take a deeper dive into the fight between tech companies to own our living rooms and our home entertainment experiences. I'm Jason Middleton, and this is Techonomics. Please stick around.